Welcome back to another episode of Drivers, Sports and Leisure Research Group's podcast devoted to the latest trends in the golf industry and highlighting the individuals setting them. I'm David Klein, along with John Last. And for this episode, let's talk a little bit, John, about how aspirational golfers are. You know, we all have bucket list courses. Some of us want to play Torrey Pines. Some of us want to play Augusta or Pebble Beach. Others kind of have a little bit of a different aspiration. They want to play golf in every state in the country. And John, I know you're one of those golfers. And what is it, 46 out of 50?
I've been to 46 of 50 states. I haven't played in all of them, but getting there.
So our guests today may offer you and others like you, John, a unique solution. Who do we have joining us on the first tee today?
Well, I venture to say that when one thinks about coveted golf destinations, the state of Alaska isn't necessarily intuitively going to show up on everyone's list. It's on mine. And our guests today would also agree that it probably should, because Amos Stevens and Vicky Urbina have worked diligently to create a really special golf experience at their Settlers Bay golf course in Wasilla, Alaska. I've enjoyed getting to know them over recent years, and it's great to have both of you on Drivers. And let's start by telling our listeners a little bit about your facility and where Wasilla is and the history of Settlers Bay and your involvement in its operations.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you, David. It's great to be on. We got Vicky with us, my partner,
who's Hello, everyone.
been doing this with me for 16 years. I've been at the facility for 27. And, you know, Wasilla is a bedroom community to Anchorage. We're 50 miles from the heart of downtown Anchorage, and we find ourselves right on the edge of the Iditarod Trail on what originally started out as a 2,000-acre development. Nine Holes was first built in 1977. And in 1996, nine additional holes were added. And we're the only privately owned 18-hole facility in the Anchorage market. I've been here since 2000. I graduated from the University of Kentucky and found Vicky to join us in 2010, and she can elaborate a little bit more on the whole aspect that we got going on.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us. We truly appreciate the opportunity. I am a teacher at heart, and Amos is correct. I joined the team and the facility 16 years ago. I knew nothing about golf. For me, it was going to be a fun little summer job. And then it turned out, well, here we are now, 16 later, so, you know, owner operators, loving what we do. And I think the journey really took place when we took over the operations with the vision to build not just a golf course, but a community, a culture, and to create something that is just much more than just golf.
Yeah, it's fascinating to have heard your story over the years, and you both became quite active in the golf community. I know you've learned a lot from other golf facility operators. The obvious question, you have a compact season. We're talking about playing golf in Alaska, but you also benefit from having plenty of daylight during that season. Share with us some of the unique challenges and opportunities that present themselves at Settlers Bay from an operational standpoint, and how they may differ from those faced by facility operators in the lower 48 states.
Well, I guess I would start by, you know, we start often by explaining Settlers is it's Colorado Rocky Mountain golf with an ocean. So we're looking at beautiful mountain peaks, and we happen to have an ocean flanking in front of those, but it's 180 days of snow and ice. And then we have 6 months of the other 180 days that we don't have snow and ice. But of those, the grass really only grows for 120. So the challenges that come with that are really fighting one thing so that we have a product that's worth that we can produce in that 120 days to capture the revenue. And that's the whole point. No, the fact that our season is short doesn't take away from the fact that all the costs are still there. And now we have this short window that we have to get everything in to trap that revenue to fund all these costs that every other facility has, no matter where it is. And we've dealt the snow and ice being the issue. Covers are our significant expertise, if you will, because being on the ocean allows for rain events in January, and that is what's a little bit different from Rocky Mountain golf. Typically, it'll stay snowy most of the winter in the Rockies, not so much here.
Interesting. What about from the operational aspects in terms of some of the best practices, staffing side, the technology side, inventory management? Are there differences or particular challenges that you've learned in being active in the golf owner community that you have to approach in different ways than you may be seeing some of your peers and colleagues, again, in the lower 48?
I believe that operating in Alaska gives us a truly unique rhythm. We definitely go down to the lower 48 to all of these shows that we love to assist in and learn about the technology or the hiring practices. And, here in Alaska, we do go through that kind of same rhythm as everybody else experiences. And also, what works in the lower 48 might need a little tweaking up here. Whether it's pricing models, we do dynamic pricing, whether it's adapting to GPS systems, or what else do we do?
Well, I would kind of to feed off of her staffing issue, getting someone Alaska, oh, why don't you come up to Alaska and help us run this golf course from a PGA perspective or from a GCSA superintendent, assistant superintendent model. Well, let me just tell you, we've been down that road,
It has not worked.
and not everybody likes being away from home 2,500 miles, i.e. Seattle. Okay. Where else were you? Okay, let's go beyond Seattle. Okay, 5,000 miles if we're coming from Florida. So the trick that we have three apprentices currently. So we take the model of you look like you're going to fit. We're going to groom you, but you know what? Instead of us spending all our money on moving someone, we now spend all our money on educating you to fit into our operation. So we fund the idea of putting them through the PGA apprentice program. We fund the idea of putting through the GCSAA apprentice program. We have another one that's going through the culinary steps here for us in the kitchen. So that would be a key point of the staffing issue, as far as we always are stealing ideas when we go down to the show from the technology. No aspect of the golf business is being invented in Alaska. It's not happening. And so we're down there all the time, like, okay, we need, for instance, the newest technology on controlling golf carts with GPS, or the autonomous idea. We're already autonomously picking our range. We're going to be autonomously mowing things here, not too distant future. It's all moving in that direction. And as I say, we didn't learn it by staying in Alaska.
I knew it was good, Vicky.
Sorry, I was going to say we highly believe in education. Like I said before, I'm an educator at heart. So giving the opportunity to these youngins, let's call them, that come in and walk through our doors and we see the potential in them, I think it's only right that we provide that opportunity that was provided to us. And it's wonderful to see the growth, not only as them as humans and as people going through these education programs, but also the growth that they bring to our business. So it's kind of a wonderful thing to see and be part of.
It's loyal. They're much more loyal. I mean, when we dealt with the GCSAA, those that were already trained, and they just we spend all the money, we get them here, and then they're gone in 6 months. We got nowhere, really. You know, by the time we bring them up to speed to the facility or on the PGA side too, it don't work. Well, it didn't work in our situation. It was just too risky to pick that person. And we all know how difficult hiring is to begin with.
Yeah, the labor issues have been consistently a huge issue throughout the industry. Let's talk a little bit about marketing. We've had a number of conversations, I know, over the years about marketing the facility. And first, love for you to share a little bit about your target customers and the mix between visiting golfers and residential play and how that breaks out among your guests. And where do you see things going? And tactically, how do you get the word out and accentuate the differentiating aspects of a round of Settlers Bay? How do you do that?
So I'm the one that actually leads our marketing efforts. It is a, I would say it's a mix about storytelling and connection. We focus mostly on digital engagement, social media. I've noticed that bringing the behind the scenes aspect has worked for us very well. People love to see, or our customer base loves to see, all of the dedication and the work and the effort that goes behind the scenes to be able to provide the product that we currently have. When it comes to whether we market outside or if we target our demographic that is currently with us, that is shifting a little bit. I feel like the more we go to these shows, the more we understand that we have the potential of being that bucket list item. And the potential of being that destination golf course. Amos always says that people come to Alaska not wanting to golf, right? They want to see a bear, they want to see a whale, they want to see the mountains, they want to have helicopter rides. And absolutely, you definitely want to come out and see the beauty of what Alaska is. But we also have this amazing golf course that we can offer and make it part of that scenic trip, let's call it. So currently we market through our community. I have been very adamant about creating a culture of where the golf course is not just a golf course. We are a community hub. We provide obviously fun things outside of golf and just the trajectory that the golf business is going towards. For example, Toptracers or Topgolf, the gamification of ranges. We have been doing our very, what I would say, we've dedicated a couple of years in research and we are moving forward to gamifying our range and creating that experience to target a different demographic than just the regular golfer that we have.
Interesting. Yeah, I know we talked about the cruise industry as being, kind of an untapped potential because a lot of excursions, I could see that. Again, having worked in that industry briefly, I kind of thought, boy, that sounds really interesting. But
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, our situation's unique in the sense that the cruise lands 50 miles from here. It's a touchy city. If we were in Anchorage, I think it may be a different game, right? It just is really tough. And even in Anchorage, the cruise is not, I mean, I really don't understand it completely from a standpoint of, I mean, some of the boats land in Anchorage and some of them land in Whittier. Well, when they land in Whittier, they got to get on a train. That's 2 hours to get to Anchorage. So it's just so many moving parts. And then you got to get them from Anchorage all the way to here. And we just haven't been able to figure it out quite yet, if you will.
We're getting there, though.
Yeah. Hey,
Settlers Bay,
guys.
hashtag bucket list.
Hey, guys, shifting gears a little bit, it goes without saying that running a golf course in Alaska brings with it a unique set of challenges with respect to agronomy. Paint a picture for our listeners about some of the key issues that you guys need to navigate on the course management side and how they stack up relative to golf facilities in more temperate or longer season markets.
Well, let's just start with the ideology that we're only growing grass for 110 out of 110 to 120 days. Okay, so we're sell so and we have quote unquote this pent up demand from the 180 days that we just got done with snow and ice. So the minute this snow is out of the way, these people are coming out of the woodwork to play golf. And the turf is not going to grow for 45 days after that particular point. So we only have, so we go, first thing we're going to do to start the season is we're going to put a ridiculous amount of rounds. And I'm talking in the neighborhood of 8,000, something like that, nine maybe. In that first 45 days, we're going to put that kind of number of rounds on turf that's not growing. And then the turf's going to kick in. So what we still need to maintain putting surfaces from a standpoint of aerification to keep infiltration rates where they need to be and so forth. So as we've been perfecting this, we used to not cover greens, and it was always a crapshoot on what we have. So you can only imagine if you have winter kill issues, and with 180 days of snow and ice, that's very likely. But now that we have the turf covering program perfected after 27 seasons, we now have CO2 and oxygen monitoring going on underneath the cover, so we know what is going on with the greens all winter long on whether CO2 levels are getting too high, too low with oxygen numbers, whatever. We know. So it used to be a crapshoot. We would go out and we would blow air under the covers, but we never knew what we were doing. And now that we do know what we are doing, we believe that we have the ability to fix it. We would aerify our greens. I'm getting to the point of aerification. Where do you fit aerification into this whole process and still have a playing surface that you can work with when you only got 120 days of actual turf growth? And then you know that first 45 days is like mayhem, right? They've been tied up. You're running a dynamic pricing model. They're willing to pay whatever basically at that time because they are so gung-ho to play golf. And you don't have a whole lot of competition in Alaska for activities at that beginning of the, you know, they're not going fishing yet. They can't even climb up in the mountains yet because there's still too much snow. It's just nice spring days, and it's a perfect thing to go do, play golf. And so the demand is just so high. With our aerification, now we used to do it in the fall heavily. Well, we would come out of the fall, we got perfect greens, but we still have our aerification holes. So the ball roll was terrible because it wasn't going to grow for the first 45 days anyways. So now we've perfected that. We now have the greens as tight and beautiful as you can imagine in that fall window. And we've adjusted the verification process to not be damaging during that time. So when we come out right now, ball roll is going to be great. The experience is what they want it to be. And even though they're now the golf course does look crazy from 8,000 divots, right? Nobody's fixing, you know, nothing's growing, right? So we have to be on top of replacing divots at that time of year because I mean it really becomes. Well, there's been people playing golf here, you can tell, right? Nothing's healing itself. You're not out there mowing, chopping up the divots either. You got to put them back. So, in a nutshell, that's the hardest avenue. You got to get through that 180 days of snow and ice, and then you got 45 days with all this play, and nothing's grown. Kind of hard to imagine, really, until you've done it a couple times.
For sure, for sure. Is there anything that you've learned in terms of rewriting the science of golf course maintenance that others might learn from?
I think the thing that's becoming key, you know, let's stop from the idea or it's the aerification issue. So the aerification issue is changing drastically right now in the golf business. From we have believed that we were managing organic matter through aerification, and we've been pounding greens and pounding greens and pounding greens for so long. We're not making any dents in organic matter management by pounding greens. So we're learning now that nitrogen is the key to controlling organics, and aerification really is only the process to keep infiltration rates where they need to be so water is moving through the profile and we have gas exchange. And learning to adapt those two things, meaning we're going to control organic matter through nitrogen applications and growth regulator applications. So nitrogen's going to improve growth and stimulate growth. Growth regulators are going to slow growth. So we're going to take those two things and we're going to get that balance right to control organics, to limit how aggressive we need to be with aerification so that we can enhance and become more consistent with ball roll. And that's really what it's after. We want trueness and smoothness with ball roll. And that is what we are working on so diligently in with our turf covers and all that in this environment so that we don't have to be as disruptive in that shorter window that we have to fetch the best price for all the expenses that we continue to have just because we're in Alaska and nothing changes on that.
Fascinating stuff. We could talk for an hour on this. We are just about at the end of the time that we typically allot for these. I hate to kind of wrap it up. I'll close though with one quick question that I'm sure our listeners would love to know the answer to, and I think we've talked about it. What's the latest tee time that you offer during the season, given the extra daylight that you have? What's the latest someone could play and get all 18 in?
So we do have regular play like all golf courses do. However, we do extend just because we do have daylight throughout the summer, especially June and July. So our latest tee time is going to be somewhere around 8:30 p.m. So basically you can make the rotation and potentially stop playing somewhere around midnight.
I love it.
Don, we're there. We are there.
You've got to do this. You know, I always thought it was great that I could play like at 7 o'clock at night and, you know, get around in about 2.5 hours and get it on in New York. But wow, 8:30 to midnight. That signed me up. Guys, we've got to figure out how to make this work. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. Fascinating stuff. Settlers Bay in Wasilla, Alaska. Put it on the bucket list. And thanks for being a part of Drivers. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Dave.